Hey guys, welcome to Local Roots. We're going to get right into this amazing episode with the legend, Gary Fisher. Before we do, just a quick reminder, no ads or anything this week, but we do have the shop. Bunch of cool gear. Check it out. A perfect for your podcast fan. What a great Christmas present. Yeah, check it out. It's at localroots.us, and then go ahead and click shop, and we've got a bunch of cool hoodies and some cool stuff that represents your local trails. So get on it or don't. It's totally your call. Let's listen to this episode. Am I right?
Welcome to Local Roots Podcast. We have a very special episode.
We do. I'm so excited. Brian, I think this might be probably the last one because it's the goal of every mountain biking podcast to probably have the guest we have today.
I think so.
It's the apex.
Yes. And I think you're going to have a brief hiatus in your life, Larry, from podcasting as well.
Oh, well, that's a whole different story. But yeah, the baby's due any minute. And Gary was just talking about his kids before we started here. So maybe I'll have some questions for you towards the end here. Sure. You can give me some tips.
Get some mountain bike and parenting advice from Gary Fisher.
That's the dream. So welcome.
Our guest is the man, the myth, the legend, all of the above, Sir Gary Fisher. Thank you for... joining
us, right?
Hey, yeah. Hey, it's great to get back to Michigan, boy.
Okay,
you know, come on. I've spent some time there. I've had some good times out in Michigan.
Well, funny you say that. We've actually met briefly.
Yeah, we've met you before.
Yeah. I remember you guys. Yeah, I totally remember.
Totally.
Gary, I will tell you what you told me. It was at the Iceman, like Gary Fisher booth. Mm-hmm. And we went up there and I asked you what's your advice for your first Iceman? You kind of like pulled me to the side and like in my ear, you were like, well, I'd pedal fucking fast.
That's it. That's all you could do.
It's the only advice that I needed.
That's it. You know?
He's lived by that advice since that day.
Yeah.
Well, it's wonderful to have you, and thanks again. And I know, I almost said as per usual, but not per usual, just technical difficulties. We're on our third different software to record this, so I appreciate your patience.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. It's what happens, and that's like always an early adopter. You know, my brother's a geek, you know, went to Stanford, electronics, mathematics. Went to Tandem. He was a hardware designer for 8 years. Then he went to Harvard, got an MBA, and then he came and worked for me.
Right. So who's the real winner there? Yeah.
I am, you know, having him. But that's the thing is you want to try and get the very best people you possibly can. As it makes, that is the secret to business, you know.
I like that.
And that's... That's it. I mean, people that you, and we always got along. God, we had a good time. But anyway, I mean, you know, and it was hard, you know, back then.
Sure.
It was because we were small and the cost of money was really high. And I mean, and, you know, currencies were all over the place. The Japanese yen was soaring in value and everything. And everybody and their brother wanted to get into the business at the time.
So you're talking heyday of making some Gary Fisher rides. Is that what we're
doing? Oh, yeah. It was, okay. Now I've done a book finally.
Yes.
After all this time, you know, finally. And that was John Burke, the president of Trek, saying, Gary, you got to write a book.
Really?
John, okay. Come on.
So it
man.
Wasn't your idea?
No, he was like, come on. You got all these stories.
I learned a long time ago.
You got to write a book. And I'm
my family. John, and I'll tell you, my family is an American
really a writer.
Family.
I mean, they have a hard time. I'm that really, is, like, I mean, blocked at the whole thing.
You know, came over from Europe.
And he keeps American pounding family. On me. Okay. In a gentle way.
So let's qualify.
Saying, I should do it.
And
you know, a real old time for that, which is, you know, it's like my family's been around a long time. You know, daughters of the American Revolution, that sort of thing, right? And my great grandfather built a lot of the rail up in Montana. And he would have this guy, was, you know, 29 years old. He'd have 350 or 300 men working for him, all different nationalities, and they keep them in different camps and everything. He'd have back in, you know, the turn of the last century, you know, $1.5 million, $2 million contracts to build this stuff, tunnels and all this crazy stuff. And his wife, you know, my great grandmother was a great mathematician, you know, And that really helped. Yeah, that really helped and everything. And my grandfather was worked in Hollywood, Holy Toledo. Okay. And he was like one of the people that really took everything from silent movies to sound movies. I mean, wow, and he developed this job called the script supervisor.
Okay. And I've heard of that.
I found all these photos of him in the middle of these scenes because the actors are talking to him all the time because he's always talking about this is how you say it. And he was one of the guys that developed this new type of English that was not the King's English, right? British English. That would be speaking down to the American people. And he had to develop an English that was understood by people all around the nation. And that's what we call American broadcast English. It's very plain. But man, literally, he was there. And he used to lecture me as a boy. I spent time down there. I mean, come on. I was in on the Howdy Doody show in the peanut gallery. You know, I went to opening day at Disneyland, you know. I used to, my grandfather would bring home Ronald Reagan, Joan Crawford, Errol Flynn. My grandfather was real big in the Screen Actors Guild. Ronald Reagan was the president of the Screen Actors Guild. When Ronald Reagan was president, he'd get telegraphs, or he'd send telegraphs to my grandfather when he was president of the United States. It's crazy,
oh,
you know.
Shit.
Damn.
My grandfather did propaganda films in World War II. My grandfather did Treasure of the Sierra Madre, you know. Can you imagine? He script-directed that the Mexican dude saying, Badges? Badges? He did Stanley Kubrick's Lolita.
Really?
I got a book signed by Sue Lyon to Apple. It was Fred Applegate, you know, best wishes and everything. And it was, you know.
So how? What was the process of trying to capture all these crazy stories and backgrounds into one book without having to write like 60 of them?
Is that I got a hold of, you know, the guys that do did the Rule Your series for Rafa over in the UK. I met those guys a long time ago, and they're the best. And that's my grandfather, my father. They'd all teach me. It's like you don't. And my mother. My mother taught me publicity. Oh, my God. She got me in the L.A. Times when I was like 6 years old. You know, it's crazy. And a bunch of other newspapers. Just, hey, I got a story for you. My mother, 89 years old, saying to me, Gary, you're doing their job for them. And that's called, you know, taking care of the press.
Yeah, love that.
And that has always been in my blood.
I mean, yeah, that's why you're here today, right?
Yeah, you know. And
not big press, but some press.
Yeah, well, anyway, blah de blah. You know, my kids put me in my place all the time, right? The little ones, that's for sure.
Can't wait.
No, it's the best. Yeah, it's the best. We've been having such a good time with it. Anyway, once again, I'm so lucky. I can't believe it that I got these kids. But at any rate, the book is, you know, these guys, oh my goodness, you wouldn't believe this book in that it's got not a single page with black print on white paper. Everything has, there's photographs, a ton of photographs. For about 2.5 years, I really got into scanning, you know.
Okay.
And I got a couple of really good Epson scanners and just, I got good at it. And
how
I got
long did this book take you to make?
About 4 years.
Okay. That's some work.
You know, John Burke could say, where's the book? How's the book? Oh, man, for 4 years I've been taking this guilt. And, you know, he had in mind me doing a book sort of like one of his in that, you know, you sit down, you write 100 words a day, and pretty soon you get a book. But this book is a lot more intense in that, you know, yeah, there are all these stories, and yeah, I can tell you stories. I can tell you a ton of stories, but it just gets to be a ton of stories. It doesn't have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And so I really, really worked hard.
Is that essentially, sorry to cut you off, is that essentially what your book is going for? Is it just you telling a bunch of like wild stories?
No.
It's okay.
Trying to, you know, I wanted to have a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Ah.
And it's more like the saga of this is what we do. And this is how we've been doing in the States, you know, as a country, you know, and it's amazing. You know, my other great grandfather, he was in Ohio, you know, and he was a huge distributor to grocery stores.
Okay.
And he built this house. He moved to LA and he built this house. That was used, that Kim Basinger lived in L.A. Confidential, you know? And he was connected with all the movie people and that whole thing. It was a scene, you know? He was a scene, but I got this dissertation of his. He was famous for making speeches, too. I'm thinking, whoa. I mean, because I'll make speeches all the time, and I'll go, where did that come from? That's where that comes from. You know, it comes from your ancestors and things. It's sort of bizarre. It is a DNA thing, you know?
It's in the blood.
We know that, you know? You know, for better, for worse, whatever. And he, this fabulous dissertation on all the different races and people, because he had the clever idea of, I'm going to sell to everybody. And he did, you know.
Who'd have thought, including everyone.
And that's the same, my other great-grandfather with these construction crews, he'd have the Italians over here. He'd have an Italian chef. He'd have, you know, the French over there, they'd have a French chef. He'd have, you know, the Irish, the, you know, and the different, they'd be in camps together and he'd bring in a chef and then they go into competitions, you know. Truly, you know, and work it that way, keep it friendly, but competitive, you know, and it always works, you know, it worked, but it's getting to be like, I don't know, I could go into this whole thing. Because we do a whole lot of international business, you know, trek, and I've been traveling around all over the place. And what you learn is that they're really smart and really stupid people all over the world, and it's just like evenly spread.
There's no one defining characteristic. They're just everywhere.
Well, there are characteristics defining characteristics.
You're classifying us, you right know? Now.
There are not, you know, there's no dead giveaways, though.
And there's nowhere to hide from them, it sounds like.
Yeah. But we have worked really hard on having good partners. That's been part of the whole success. And then you find really good people. And then it's like these guys in the book. I just trusted what they wanted to do, and they knew it. You know, and that's what I've always done is I try to find the very best and then I say, go for it, man. And sometimes I don't understand their ideas and stuff.
I mean, it goes back to what you said right at the beginning is surrounding yourself with the smart people to help you get the job done.
It's
right?
The old thing. I want to be the dumbest guy in the room.
There you go.
That's smart.
Yeah, and get smart people because that's where you learn. That's where I've learned. I was never a formal engineer, but I learned from a lot of the, you know, that from Shimano, Seguino, Nitto, on and on. I mean, Columbus, you know, I went to Italy 8 times 1 year and designed a line of Cinelli bicycles. You know, I learned
really
a lot, especially how to eat in Italy.
Without gaining a million pounds.
Well.
That's what I would struggle with.
No, give me all the cheese.
It is a struggle. All that good food all the time. That's a great place to eat, you know. They're in Japan. Japan's my other favorite place to eat. They're amazing on what they do.
That's awesome.
And it's, you know, the book gets into like my Japanese thing because I did myself and Mike Senior, we pretty much, you know, kickstarted the whole Japanese supply train. You know, I went around all the, you know, I'd go like 7, 8, 9 times a year. And I'd spend up to, one time I spent 6 weeks in Japan.
Wow. You know, and so what are the biggest markets outside of the US? Is it Japan or what are the other ones?
Oh, no. Well, Japan is, You know, Japan is like what they say, it's the second largest ski market, or the largest, because everybody gets a brand new pair of skis every single year.
Nice.
That sort of thing. You know, that they have that sort of reputation. They like to buy nice stuff. But I'll tell you, a lot, they're not absolutely number one. I mean, there's a lot of countries in Europe that are really big. U.S. is still is. The U.S. is a great country to sell in. Come on. I mean, when we would go to Europe, and it's like even they get the common market and all that sort of thing, and you'd have a warranty center in Switzerland, and this guy in Italy, 80 miles away, would say, hey, no way I'm dealing with those guys. The U.S. is really easy. I mean, we deal with the whole country. It's super easy, you know, and they've done a lot to, like, you know, take away the borders there, you know, in Europe, and that's why they had that whole common currency and they do the whole thing. But this is the easiest country, you know. It's one big honking big market, and everybody's hoping that China would be the next big market, you know. But brother, that is difficult. You know, yeah,
great time for that.
No, and now, it's like not good at all. But it's really funny. Man. You know, I was thinking things like the Mexican peso. You realize back in 90, I think it was like 94 or something, that it was 3.1 pesos to the U.S. dollar, and now it's 21 pesos to the U.S. dollar. And you think, you know, what does that do? That makes it so somebody from Mexico says, boy, I want to come work in the States and send some money home, because the money is super valuable back home. And the same with the States. If I'm here and I want to have something made in Mexico, oh boy, it's inexpensive. So people don't think about that. Currencies have a huge effect. And at the same time, the Chinese currency has gotten 10%, 15% stronger. That's it. You know, and at the same time, their economy, well, you know what that's done since 70 or back in 90 something, you know? Woo, baby. So it's there's always like other numbers to look at. And the thing about currencies that I learned, because boy, did we like have to deal with currency stuff back in the day, is that currencies are based mostly on what people think they should be worth. You know, that is really funny. So it's
that's interesting.
It's a really complex world. And to me, it's just like, ever the fascinating, you know. So and it's crazy times, you know. It's totally crazy times right now, you know. It's it's funny, you know, and the bike world is doing really well. It's funny, but we don't have enough supply.
Oh right. Yeah, we ran into that this summer, didn't we?
Brother, you know. It's funny, but it's amazing. I mean, we're being considered an essential business, and it's to me, that is like a great harbinger that many people realize that this brings goodness to life. That is,
it does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and we're friends with quite a few local bike shop owners, and they were like, they're kind of advocating in the beginning of the lockdown. They're like, hey, you know, we are essential. You know, we're giving people everything, whether it's transportation, but it's more, you know, taking care of your mental health, exercise, things like that. It is incredibly important.
Right.
So big. Yeah.
Right. Right. So it's a really exciting times too, because, it's like, I want that train, a high-speed train put back in from Madison to Milwaukee, you know? You know what I'm saying? It's like we were getting there a little while ago. Remember that?
I remember.
Don't forget that kind of stuff, you know? It's crazy. We need that like crazy. You know, and the same with the whole, with what we're doing with bikes, you know, the bike routes and the off-road routes, I mean, the parks and all that, and bringing more, the mountain bike trail builders are amazing in that they think in 3D, and it's like the guys, I met these guys at the Red Bull Rampage that.
Oh, I bet that's fun.
Oh,
jealous.
That thing.
You still ride anything like that?
I have to ride that. Well, yeah, that's the whole point. But these guys are really good. You know,
unreal.
They're really good athletes. They have to, right? And then the guys who build the trails, they use mathematics. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
They're developing algorithms. And those guys, I mean, most of the bike route right now, I mean, our designers, they're working in 2D, not 3D. And, you know, it's like, it gets really squirrely in some of the routes these days. You know, the routes have got to be widened. You know, everything's got to be widened out. You know, there's just not enough.
And then the higher you go up, the more speed to calculate in too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Bigger the cost of error, which is crazy. Geary, as we're talking about bikes and, you know, obviously being a bike designer, what do you think are the couple biggest like innovations of the mountain bike since its birth?
I think, honestly, like all the geometry lately, there's more change in the last 5 years than there was for 30 years before that. And I'm yes, finally. I mean, I can get tires that are too fat and I can get tires that are too skinny. I can get everything in between. I love it. You know,
that's great.
And then we got crazy people. You know, we got Travis Brown is working on that 36
inch wheel.
There are.
You got to explain.
It seriously works.
How? Are you like 80 feet off the ground?
No. It's like what a bigger wheel does is it sort of it slows down the movement. You know,
okay.
It's like everything gets to be a bigger, you know, into bigger movements, and that's not beneficial if you're trying to whip stuff around. You know, it is very beneficial if you're trying to be high speed over like rough terrain and everything, and be graceful with the thing.
So, Iceman, we're gonna see 36 inches.
One of these days, you will.
I mean, I have the biggest
crazy.
Regular.
And you know the amazing thing? I'm like, they did a story in Pink Bike on Travis playing around at that 32 and 36. And the letters, I mean, the responses on that were amazingly positive.
Oh, good.
People can be brutal on Pink Bikes, too.
Oh, tell me. You know, it's funny. So, like, I was really impressed, you know, that people are like, they've given it up and said, hey, whatever tire size you want, whatever works, I don't care. You know, and that's a good attitude. You know, we'll figure out what works where. And you go to a far off place and then you come back usually from it. You know, this is too much. It's like the people went to really, 3-inch tire, 4-inch tire width, right? And the guys in the racing, you know, they want to run 2.5, you know, even in the downhill, something like that. They don't want to go much bigger than that. You know, and in a cross country, it's gotten bigger because the courses have gotten much better, you know.
They're getting harder. You've got XCs, the dropper posts, and everything like that.
Right. Yeah. It's cool. You know, I mean, what's happened? I mean, the bikes, I mean, boy, in the 90s, the bikes were like these bad little road bikes.
Sure.
You know? Road bikes with knobby tires.
Like, yeah. I mean, you know, well, gravel bikes, right?
Yeah.
That's what it was. It's funny, you know. So it's, there have been such advances in suspension, you know, and then it's like the whole one by gearing thing, I think is great. It's just more simplicity and people playing around with it, you know, and all that. It's great. So
what's your go-to? Do you still hit the trail? And if so, is there, I heard a lot about e-bikes that you're hanging out on those, which sounds so fun.
I love riding the mountain bike. It's a lot of fun, but I don't have one right now.
Someone send this guy e-bike, right?
No,
I got a cargo bike, you know, that's not a Trek. And I've got
shit.
Well, we don't make one yet. You know,
I bet they will now.
Well, they're working on it, you know, that's for sure. Yeah. And it takes time to do it right, you know, to make the thing work right and come out right. And it's funny, man. I work on the Marlin. That's one of my favorite bikes.
Okay.
Because it's
iconic.
Well, okay. I'll tell you why.
Okay.
it's like based on, the bike is based on parts that don't go wrong. This bike is based on parts that I can always get a supply worldwide. That bike is based on dimensions that are available everywhere. You know, it's got an 1 1/8 straight steer. You know, it's got like all these things that like, they're real standard. And guess what? We didn't change. And most of the bike's model, we didn't change any of the parts in the last year. parts are exactly the same spec, except for the highest end one, you know? And I like that because it makes something, the whole idea is like, this thing is reliable, replaceable, repairable, you know? Yeah. And I mean, that's the idea. And that bike right now is the largest, you know, selling number wise mountain bike in the world under one model name.
Believe it. I very much believe it.
We sell it in 100 countries.
I recommend that to anyone wanting to get into mountain bikes. Yeah. Real though.
Your brother bought a Marlin last year, Larry.
Right. Yeah, right. My old coworker, friend of the podcast, Tim. I told him to get a Marlin too. Yeah. It makes sense.
But it's sort of thing. Like, you know, it's like three. We do this thing. We say good, better, best. But I feel more like it's like our cheapest bike is cheap because it lasts a long time. Right. Dollar per mile. World's cheapest bike. You know. Then
there we go.
The middle is the crossroads of value, you know, value and performance, right? And then as the highest end one is like cost, no issue. This is crazy stuff. This is Formula One NASA, you know?
And you think, cost better not be an issue here.
It's like what, you know, you think a bike, a really nice bike these days is made like something in Formula One or NASA. And what... Can you afford the car? Can you afford the rocket ship? I sort of doubt it. You know, most people can't, you know, no way, but you can afford a bike. Bikes are, well, 10 grand, 15 grand. It's a lot of money, but it's not like in the stratosphere. You know, it's not like 250 grand, 500 grand, something crazy like that.
Let's hope not. It feels like we're getting there closer there every
year. They're getting a little more expensive every year.
But at the same time, it's like we like to make bikes that we can fix and last a long time, you know, for our kids, for our family. That's something great. I've been pushing our engineers. It's like, okay, you make these super, super nice bikes. Now make something for everybody here. And this is the definition. Let's figure out what it is people want, you know, what they want over anything. It's like, I just want this thing to work.
Yeah, reliability is the first thing you said. And I was like, yeah, that's what I want on a bike.
And the colors are good.
Yeah.
And then we did this thing on that model. We been changing out the packaging. So we use a lot less plastic in it.
That's great.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
I hate to put a screw in this, but we're running low on time already.
Okay, what else?
But I'd be remiss if we didn't get a classic Gary Fisher story before we went. Favorite thing before.
If I have any say, I would love to hear something about the dead.
Oh, the dead?
I would love to hear about the dead.
The dead. The dead's always a great thing. It's like, it's crazy. It's like, I used to like to hang out with Jerry Garcia. And go, because he'd talk a lot and we'd talk a lot and he'd think a lot. And then his girlfriend and then wife, mountain girl, you know, and he used to say to me, hey, could you not come over when I'm not here?
No.
You know, like that. And then it was like, I remember like Working Man Deads came out and Garcia was living in Larkspur at the time. And I come over like, man, I want to hear the album. Oh, shit. I gave it to Janis Joplin. It was like, and they wouldn't let me go over there by myself because that girl was crazy, you know, and she scared me a lot, you know, but she was, man, I mean, was she ever?
Did you meet her?
Oh, yeah. I'd say 2001, A Space Odyssey. We went to the premiere of it in San Francisco and she sat right next to me for that.
Oh, gosh.
You know. But yeah, she and her girlfriends were scared me. I don't know. Anyway,
I love it.
Mountain Girl is totally sweet. I totally still talk to her, you know, and her girls, you know, the Garcia girls. They're really good people. And then the Ken Kesey people, you know, the whole Ken Kesey, what they're doing and everything. They got the farm up there still, you know, it's crazy.
Oh, man.
So
how long were you with the dead for?
About 4 years. And then I just got, everything got crazy. And then Altamont happened, you know, and everybody left town, literally. We had two houses, 710 Ashbury and 715 across the street. And those were the two dead houses, you know. It's like, I'd be at 715 and we'd be up in the attic way up high. And Ramrod, who was one of the merry pranksters, would be handling the hose for a G tank of nitrous oxide. Nitridius oxidilius is what we used to call it. And there would be Ken Kesey, Jerry Garcia, you know, Phil Lesh. Oh, shit, man. Everybody loved nitrous. And Ramrod was a guy, pull it out of your mouth and say, no, nah, you've had too much. And you'd be just like this. It was really stupid. And the tank would go totally white, you know, because all the, you get cold and totally frosted.
Okay.
Oof. But, you know, I couldn't handle it after a while. We moved to the, from San Francisco, we moved to Marin County, back to Marin County. And I was living with a band called New Writers of the Purple Sage, which was offshoot of the Grateful Dead. Country Western, psychedelic country Western. I mean, the code word for those guys, you go, you call them at the hotel. And, you know, there's no New Writers here. Nude Writers, or there's no New Writers of the Purple Sage here. And the code word was Nude Writers with Purple Shirts on. And they'd be there. But, oh, man. I used to take care of their house, you know, so I had free rent. And
nice.
They'd be on the road a fair amount. They were doing really well. And then what happens with a lot of bands at the time, they get successful and everybody wants their own house. So then I needed a new place to live. And that's when I met Charlie Kelly. They said, oh, you got to meet this guy. He's just like you. You know, he had an orange Colnago, just like I had an orange Colnago. And
okay,
he had long hair. And I moved into Charlie. And that was a lot of fun with Charlie. You know, a good time. But I got...
That sounds amazing. It was, and I hate to cut you off. It sounds like you're just getting started. But we're going to get kicked out here. Gary, I got to thank you so much for taking some time here.
I'll be back. I'll come back and I'll hang with you guys. You know,
we're not done.
We'll have a software that works by then, I promise.
Yeah.
You guys. Yeah.
Yeah, Gary, thank you. Cue the Wayne's World. We're not worthy.
Me a break. You guys, get out of here. I love that movie, but nah.
Gary, and we'll be sure. We'll have a link for your book all in the description here. So if you guys want to go check it out, please go check it out. I know I'm going to order one, at least for me anyway. Right. So I can't wait to check it out.
Thanks, you guys. Thanks. I was so happy with what the Blue Train guys did. A bunch of young guys got a hold of it and they went crazy.
Yeah.
I love it.
Sounds like a must read.
It's an ultimate gift, you know, in a lot of ways. It's
a perfect gift for the mountain biker in your life.
I'm not trying to, I don't know. It just turned out. All right.
All right. I know that ended kind of abruptly, so I'm just kind of going to try to end that and explain what happened. I guess to make the long story short, we usually use this app to record, and for whatever reason, Gary's mic couldn't hook up to it, so we had to go to Zoom, which, as many of you know, has a limit, and we weren't going to make Gary join another Zoom or whatever. Anyway, we're so thrilled to have him, and like he said, hopefully we can get him back on for a longer episode someday soon. But definitely go check out this book, guys. I'm so excited to go get my own copy, and maybe I'll surprise Brian one for Christmas or something. He's a legend. Hope you guys enjoyed this, and like I said, we'll hopefully get him on again. Just so thrilled to have him on the podcast. Thanks again, Gary. And thank you guys for listening. I appreciate it. Thank you. Oh, and bye.